Hey, everybody. Welcome back to the Verbal Shenanigans podcast. We got another good one for you. Two of our favorite guests of all time returned to the show today, and we'll get to that in just a second. Now, we have a couple sponsors on this show that we are very happy to work with, and one of them is Demented Brewing. Demented Brewing is located in Middlesex, New Jersey, right off of 287 there. They have one of the coolest tap rooms. They have a lot of different beers. They're always trying something new. This is a very great place to go get a beer and enjoy a day. Now, they just released Desolate Fields, their all-new farmhouse saison. Thursdays are now Acoustic Thursdays with live acoustic music at the brewery. Next Saturday from 2 to 6, Silent Q will be performing. On Sunday, they're going to be releasing an all-new Kolsch beer. It's a great place to hang out, a great tap room, 16 tap handles. So go check out Demented Brewing. You can check them out at dementedbrewing.com, Instagram, Facebook, all that. Adirondack Brewery, if you're vacationing this year in Lake George or going through the Adirondack region, you have to stop at Adirondack Brewery on Lake George. It's one of the coolest places. Great food, amazing beer, just a really cool environment to go stop and eat and have some great beverages. They got Cucumber Cool now on tap. Their July Beer of the Month is fermented with Brettanomyces and conditioned on freshly peeled cucumber and cucumber puree. Explosive notes of cucumber and honeydew burst out of the glass and is backed up by earthy funk contributed by the Brett, a highly refreshing summer crusher. 4% alcohol, 10 IBU. Sounds like a great drink to have by the lake. And be on the lookout for their next shape-shifting IPA, Pyramid, featuring Simcoe and Mosaic hops. Check out the Adirondack Pub and Brewery. The third brewery that we are aligned with is Manskirt Brewing, located in Hackettstown, New Jersey. Manskirt Brewing is another just really cool place to hang out. Every week, it seems like he's doing something new to the brewery. Joe Fisher there in his Manskirt. They have seasonally inspired ales, things changing all the time. They are open on Wednesdays now, 4 to 9, which means more time to drink delicious Manskirt beer. They got our barrel-aged Wee Heavy and Barley Wine bottles available for $17 each, and they're doing all sorts of events at the brewery, so go give Manskirt Brewing some love now. Go do it. Get on it. Now, Susan Robb, she is a woman out of Toronto, Canada, lives out her mission to inspire others. Susan is a client partner for the Center for Leadership Studies, original home of situational leadership. CLS is deployed in over 70% of top 500 companies around the globe. Susan is great at getting guests, inspirational speakers, people with stories. You've heard many of these guests on the show, Paul Templer, Coach Jim Johnson, Dave Andrechuk. She's great to arrange speakers for events. Contact her at susan.robb@situational.com. And finally, Trivia Revolution, fueled by craft beer. Trivia Revolution is a trivia company all based out of New Jersey in breweries and craft beer bars all over the place. I host on Wednesday nights at Tap House 15, which is also where we do the Verbal Shenanigans comedy shows. Trivia Revolution, Revolution, fueled by craft beer. Win prizes to breweries, win prizes to restaurants. It's just a really good night, so check them out online. All right, today on the podcast, what better for like a July 4th as podcast to bring back former U.S. men's team defender, the legendary Marcelo Balboa. If you're into soccer, we did a really cool interview with him, talked a lot about the U.S. men's team and whatnot, and some of the changes that are going on, the World Cup, and it's just a really cool interview, and it's glad to have him back. And then we bring back the love of my life, the world's heaviest sportswoman, Sharon Alexander, female sumo wrestler from the UK. So it is an awesome show. Two of our favorite guests return. So please enjoy the podcast, because I know I did. So I think this is where I say enjoy the podcast. Please.
Hey, this is Marcelo Balboa, former U.S. national team player. Don't forget to listen to Verbal Shenanigans every week and have a great time with these boys.
No. Hi! Hello, good evening, everybody. Sharon Alexander again, doing her little stuff with Verbal Shenanigans, having a great evening. Thank you.
But our shenanigans are cheeky and fun.
Yeah, I mean, his shenanigans are cruel and tragic.
Which makes them not shenanigans at all, really.
Evil shenanigans.
I swear to God, I'll pistol whip the next guy that says shenanigans.
Hey, everybody. And now you go.
Hi.
You're getting it. You're coming along.
Yeah, I said goodbye last week. That didn't really...
The practice is paying off, pal. Mm-hmm. It's really working. You've been really putting in a lot of hours behind the scenes here.
I'm the co-host.
Yeah. And welcome back, everybody, to another outstanding edition of the Verbal Shenanigans podcast. See, I already know it's going to be good. I'm preemptively saying it's going to be a good episode.
Very nice, very nice.
Well, it is. It's a big episode. One is July 3rd today, so you guys will be hearing this on the 4th. One of my favorite holidays. How about you?
Younger, it was one of my favorites with the family around. But again, as the family's moved across the country, mm-hmm. kind of lost a little bit in...
I like the 4th. I think I mentioned this before. I just like the fact that there's no gift buying and there's no, like, you know, you're just getting together and eating and drinking.
Much.
Like, there's nothing, you're not shopping and Christmas shopping. And
no obligations to do certain activities. Nope. The only thing would be fireworks and
that. Yeah, nothing wrong with fireworks. We had fireworks here the other day. Someone was shooting them off. It was pretty good. I thought the dog would be afraid of him, but he actually, we walked out with us and like sat there and watched him. He's like, duh. So, but anyway.
They're all gray, Daddy. No, Obi, you're colorblind.
We have a big, big American, a big, big episode in several ways today. And we also have a little bit of an American episode today.
Ooh.
Well.
How so?
Well, we got two of our favorite guests of all time. Two separate episodes. But both two of my favorite. Let me try that again. Mm-hmm. Two of our favorite guests that are on two separate episodes, but they're coming both back on today for one big episode. Not together at the same time, because that would be a weird panel. But
I'm almost intrigued to make that happen.
One of my favorite guests that we ever had, probably, I don't even know how long ago it was now. Quite a while. At least a year and a half, right?
Yeah. You were still in the old house going.
Yeah.
That
I think it was a while now. Let's see.
If I had to guess, I would probably say a year and probably early last year or even 2015. Yeah.
But anyway, we have all-time U.S. soccer legend Marcelo Balboa coming back on the show today, mm-hmm. which is fantastic. He actually called me this morning because our times were like all over the place. We couldn't figure out the time difference. But yeah, so we got him coming back on. A lot of things I want to talk to him about and pick his brain on some soccer stuff going on. And then we have our big friend from the UK, which we'll be calling a little bit, Sharon Alexander.
Look at that, man.
Female sumo wrestler, for those of you who never heard the first episode. It was a while back. Anyway, yeah. This is bad.
Throwback Tuesday.
Yeah, so hold on. I'm just looking for the what number it was. Episode 52. So yeah, that's over 100 episodes ago.
Ooh,
yeah. So it's been on. We had the pleasure of meeting Marcelo about, you know, last year sometime during the season. We had the Red Bull game. So we got to we waited for him outside for quite a long time, but we got to meet him, and a really cool guy. So I'm excited to talk to him about some things going on and also see what's going on in his life and what kind of projects he's got going on. And then Sharon, I'm already feeling a little, you know,
you're a little hot. Torn right now. You've been with Alex for quite a while, and now you're bringing up this romantic history.
It's either Alexandra or Alexander. I don't know which one really gets my... I've been fighting off these love feelings for a long time, and now she's coming back on the podcast, so I don't know...
You were tossing and turning all night, and Alex is like, what's wrong, honey? Oh, nothing. Nothing on my mind at all.
Just sweating, you know. Watching sumo clips, but yeah, it should be a fun show today. So we have both those things coming up. I don't know. We'll see if the love is rekindled today on the interview. But she's staying up for us. She said, because I asked her if she could push back an extra hour. She said that's gonna be past her bedtime, but for us, she would do it. So I already felt a little flirtation.
I think somebody's got a comforter in bed there,
yep.
Scott.
Just make sure it's a big bed.
What do you mean you got a twin?
a couple of things going on with the podcast in the last week. Some cool things. So last week? Well, we went on Mark Rigadonna and Jesse's podcast at the comic strip, which is pretty cool, called the I Did That Show. And I don't think the episode was released yet. I know they released a fireworks one for today.
Okay. Oh, okay.
Where we told some
old Uncle Frank story.
You might as well tell about Ten Finger Frank in a minute. Yeah. But we went on their show and it was a lot of fun. It was very hot, but other than that, it was a ton of fun. We did that indie comic strip, and we talked about baseball quite extensively. So much so that we pretty much ignored Mark for an hour.
Yeah. You can tell Mark's like, all right, day off. Thank you.
Yep. But so that was cool. Whenever that goes up, I'll make sure we share that. And then this coming Saturday, Jim Miller is fighting in the UFC. He's fighting Anthony Pettis this Saturday. And I don't know if anybody noticed, but if you follow us on Instagram, you took a picture of him training in our shirt, which is pretty cool.
Mm-hmm.
Speaking of shirts, we have all sorts of shirts. Not all sorts of shirts. We have a lot of shirts.
We have all sorts of shirts that all look the same.
Yes. But they are for sale, so all you have to do is contact us, and that's just $15, and I'll ship it out to you. I already shipped out a bunch this week, so hopefully.
Very nice.
So if you see them out on the street, that's what they did. And then what was really cool. It was yesterday or 2 days ago, whatever. The guys from World Chase Tag. So a couple of weeks ago,
July 1st.
So a couple of weeks ago, we interviewed the guys from a sport called World Chase Tag, which basically tag meets parkour, and they were having their second big event. Now they got a lot of, I guess they got a lot of views from a video that they put up like last year sometime or a couple weeks ago of their first event. So this one was pretty cool. Now, he messages me. He's like, hey, would you guys be interested in having your logo on one of the I guess you could call it obstacles? Or I'm like, sure. And I thought like a little sticker.
Yeah.
Turns out I'm like, oh, yeah, when you get it, just send me a picture and I'll tweet it out. And he tweets it. We had like a whole platform.
I know, man.
Well, so the Verbal Shenanigans logo was on a whole platform. I'm actually looking at it right now. And it was pretty cool. I guess they were having this big event and then working the kinks out and whatnot. But it was cool to see like all these parkour guys like doing flips on the Verbal Shenanigans sign. And so we officially were a sponsor in a sport, a professional sport.
Look at us, man.
We tried the NASCAR approach. It didn't work.
Didn't work.
Even though he could have had one tire rather than no tires.
Yeah,
we could have bought him one tire.
He's racing next weekend. No help from us. You know, he doesn't want it.
Well, I hope he loses.
Yeah. Well, he probably will. He'll probably end up about 38th to 40th.
Yeah. Well, when you have one pair of tires, I hope he loses because one tire falls.
No.
Oh well. So yeah, it was just really cool to see. I think the sport is still evolving. Like I was trying to watch it for a little while, and it was pretty cool. I think they got to find a way to kind of go back and forth a little bit. I was thinking like if there was like a time, like say I had to catch you, and then mm-hmm. we actually played like tag. Like I tag you, then you got to come get me. And like maybe the person who has like the less time as the evader or something like that, or more time as the evader, the one who's not it, something like that, will get the point. I think it needs a little bit more back and forth. But it was
kind of like tennis with a serve and a point.
Mm-hmm. So say like our match, you get 2 minutes to come after me, and then I get 2 minutes, and then the average of the two or something, maybe something like that.
Okay.
Might
okay.
Because I wanted to like see these guys flip around and stuff, and it seemed like sometimes they were tagged in like seconds. Like it was just like tag.
But, yeah, that's what I kind of noticed from watching the videos. It seems like whoever's the chase person kind of sticks there for 5 seconds waiting for the person there, and they're just like, all right, let me try to go to the left and see if this works. And
yeah,
sometimes it's immediate tag.
Yeah, sometimes they get tagged quick. But so it was pretty cool. At one point, there was like 500 people watching, so hopefully we get to stay on that platform, which is pretty neat. Something
that was
different.
Sort of a pun, if you think about it.
Oh, yeah, I get it.
Sort of.
But I was saying we needed like a...
Not Natty Bump Car level pun, but it was there.
We needed someone to like break a leg like horrifically in the worst possible way.
Like somebody breaks their neck and they're paralyzed right by our logo.
That's what I mean, like something that people would watch online and go, oh, and like,
hey, SportsCenter.
Exactly. Like blood shooting all over our logo. That would be the best press possible, you know, like... someone's just bleeding out on top of the logo. But thanks again to the guys from World Chase Tag. I thought that was really cool and really something different to see. And you know, it's like I said, you just never know what the hell is happening with this
more
damn
networking.
Thing.
That's what matters.
Yeah, yeah. So I don't know if I want to. Well, what time we got? 3:50. All right. Let's talk a little 4th of July.
All right.
So you were mentioning when we were on the I Did That show, you had an uncle. I know my grandfather apparently had a scar on his stomach from a firework blowing, like, I guess he lit it and the wind turned it around and it shot and hit him in the stomach and exploded.
And those are the old school fireworks. Safety was about the 10th thing they worried about back then.
Yeah, yeah. No one cared. Okay. But you had what was it, 10 Finger Frank?
Yeah, oh, that was the nickname. That wasn't his official.
Why don't you
nickname.
Explain that for our audience?
But every 4th of July, my uncle would come over our house. We always had a big party. We'd have, like, big pinochle tournaments. We had the pool, big
the
barbecue.
The Burlews are big on pinochle. I've learned this through the years.
Yeah, yeah. I still quite enjoy it. I'd say it's the one card game that you can really play, maybe other than Uno, where it can be competitive and it doesn't involve money. So, but
maybe you should start a pinochle league.
I'm totally down with it. I know.
Put our logo on the table.
Every ace has like one of our photos on it. Hey,
yeah,
I got 4 Burlews.
Ooh, God,
but
automatic loss.
You're barred from pinochle forever. But every year, like, somebody would go out, either, like, my Uncle Tommy would come out, stay with a bunch of fireworks, or somebody made that trip to Pennsylvania and back with a bunch of fireworks. And a thing that Frank loved to do every year would be take, like, the mini firecrackers and light it in his hand and just let them go off in his hand. And he would do it, like, in front of the kids. Hey, kids! Psst, who wants it? Who wants it? Ah, that tingles. And it would just be a reoccurring thing where every year we're just looking at jurors saying, all right, is this the year? Is this the year we're going to the hospital?
It kind of reminds me. I just pictured the old, remember that, like, I think it was like a Geico commercial with the fisherman with the dollar. Like, almost got it. Like, almost got it. Like,
oh, I
pictured,
know what you're talking
some,
about.
Some insurance company or something. Like, you get cash back. And it's like, ooh, so close. Like, I picture like him like, oh, almost blew my hands off. So close.
That feels a little loose. Let's put another one in there, see what happens.
But, I don't understand the whole fireworks being illegal thing, and like, you, why is it like I can go across the border and it's fine, but yet you cross a space and it's illegal? Like, I don't know.
It's politics, and the funny thing is, they will allow the fireworks companies to buy a billboard in the state that it's illegal, just to tell you, hey, if you go 2 miles that way over the border, come get some.
Get your explosives here. Mm-hmm. I don't know. I mean, I feel like if they're just selling, like, you know, The over-the-counter kind of ones. I don't know.
Jersey just got sparklers back. They used to be illegal. Yeah, it's like, what tragedy occurred from that? That's one.
You don't remember the great sparkler tragedy of 2004.
No, tell the audience about it, Scott.
Well, Lyndon Pete Russell, twins, grow up in a Roosevelt, New Jersey, I believe it was. Maybe
North or South?
Maybe Roselle. I can't remember the exact.
Okay.
But
you're jogging my memory.
So, you know, the two kids I just said, I already forgot their name. But they were playing.
I kind of somewhat remember. I think one was Jacques and his twin sister.
Jacques?
Yeah.
I don't think I said Jacques.
No, I'm just telling you a story for what I remember.
Oh, yeah.
And what was his sister's name?
Broomhilda, I believe.
Yeah, Jacques and Broomhilda. Yeah, go ahead.
Well, anyway, one of the twins tried to light himself up, wrapped his whole body in sparklers.
The sparkler suit incident.
Yes. Yes. And then
That was about, how many packs did he buy? Like 50 of them?
Oh, more than that. And, you know, they lit him up and he ran inside a supermarket, and it just so happened someone had dropped lighter fluid, and there's just a mass explosion of the supermarket.
I remember the guy.
Thousands died.
The guy was at the deli section. He was giving like some potato salad and some olive loaf, and when he put the potato salad in, that's when it fell out of his cart, and when he went to pick it up, he kind of stepped on it, and he didn't tell the people at A&P at the time. Cause,
I don't feel terrible for him because he was ordering olive loaf, and I mean...
Well, I mean, it's pretty cheap on the 4th of July.
If you're eating olive loaf, you might deserve to be blown up.
It's a classic 4th of July delicatessen meat.
Olive loaf.
Yes. It goes back to the 40s.
Is that even though he's like, shut up.
Yeah.
Is that what the Burlows did? Sat around and...
No, well, that was, what was it, President Roosevelt at the time? He,
Obie! Gather around, children, let's eat olive loaf.
He was, you know, dressing the nation and had an olive loaf sandwich in his hand, you know. it was tough times, you know, and, I mean, they rallied around the loaf.
Rallied around, that was their war cry for a while,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah. The Russians were afraid of the Americans, man. The troops be coming in, screaming, rally around the loaf.
Now, is it true? I've heard this. Now, maybe you can enlighten us.
Right.
That they said in the Korean War that many Americans would call out, this one's for the loaf, before attacking opponents. The opposing kinda forces.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, well, that's why they wear dark green, to support the olive of the loaf.
So you're telling me that the U.S. Army and Marines wear dark green to support olive loaf.
Exactly. I mean, there's nothing more American than the olive loaf.
Well, Burlew's history is always just absolutely...
It's time for another Burlew's history.
amazing. All right, Ten Finger Frank.
Oh, that's Frank, right?
Yeah. That was Ten Finger Frank. All right, Ten Finger Frank. So, I was looking up. You know, you always hear how dangerous fireworks and whatnot are. So, I thought we would share a couple, firework. It says this is called Tales from the Emergency Room, July 4th stories. All right?
All right.
So, let's hear a couple of these. Okay, this one's called Someone Called the Bomb Squad. Jamie Coleman, a trauma surgeon at Indiana University, in Indianapolis, said the bomb squad had to be called for one of the craziest cases she's ever seen, which happened on a 4th of July weekend. The incident involved fireworks that were the largest consumers in Indiana could buy without needing a license. While the firework was being lit at a backyard party, one of the explosive mechanisms, a metal ball about 4 inches in diameter, misfired, Coleman said. Instead of launching the firework into the air, the metal ball came out of the side of the firework and became lodged inside the patient.
Oh.
Since the explosive did not detonate, it still had the potential to explode, and the bomb squad had to be present during the man's surgery to remove it.
Wow.
They're there to protect it and ensure that it doesn't go off once they removed it, ensuring the safety of everyone in the operating room. Coleman said of the bomb squad's role, as soon as the explosive device was removed, the man's body, doctors very carefully handed it to the bomb squad, who then disposed of it safely. This stuff is so crazy sometimes, what we do and see, you can't even make it up.
Like, I wonder if they were wearing, like, that full bomb squad outfit and then, like, a little cap or something so he can't get germs during his operation.
That's what I'm saying. It's like a combination. Like, the man is like a living bomb. Like, it's like operating on a suicide, bomber. Like, making sure you can't, it's inside of him.
Like, every 5 minutes, if he was still awake during the surgery, I'd be like, he's going to blow and run out of the building.
That's wild, though.
Got you again, Jim.
You know, like they say, like, some people get, like, shot and don't get the bullets removed. Like, sometimes they're, like, lodged in there forever. Like, that's like, a whole other extreme. But that would really suck if a patient blew up. We saved him. Like, right after
God
the surgery.
Dang it.
Yeah. Damn it.
Tim, I told you, don't press the button.
All right, firecrackers and cake do not mix. A couple of years ago, a 4th of July prank led to a trip to the emergency room for a group of teenagers in New York City. During a party, the teens adorned a cake, which was decorated festively for Independence Day with sparklers. Here, this was similar to the sparkler tragedy.
Oh.
But one of the sparklers was actually a firecracker.
You can't tell?
After the blast, the group took an Uber to the emergency room where they were treated for minor injuries such as facial abrasions and a ruptured eardrum. When the teens arrived at the hospital, they were covered in cake in red, white, and blue icing, but they didn't think to stop and wipe it off before they left. None of the teams suffered eye injuries since they were already wearing goggles so they could spray champagne on each other. The blast effect from the firecracker was probably lessened since it was lit outdoors, Glatter said. Had it exploded inside, the pressure from the blast effect could have led to more serious injuries, such as ruptured bowels or collapsed lung.
First off, with Izzy working tomorrow, I know where I'm going for my 4th of July party. That just sounds insane. Second of all, that is the nicest Uber driver on the planet to let somebody who's bleeding and covered in cake icing into your car.
You better give me a 5-star rating.
Yeah, on a holiday. Let's add to it.
Yeah, he probably had the hiked rates and everything. He probably made a good buck off of it. But who put the firecracker like among the sparklers? Like some jerk definitely was like, okay, this is going to be awesome.
There's always one dick in the group.
All right, the boy who cried burn. Last year, a teen about 14 years old had to be medically evacuated from northern Michigan to Helen DeVos Children's Hospital in Grand Rapids after he fell into a campfire, said Erica, blah, 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 blah. First responders had initially reported to the doctors that the teen was burnt black and sustained surface burns to more than 30% of his body, causing his family and emergency physicians to fear the worst. When the boy arrived, he had soot all the way up to his waist, Michael said. Hospital staff got him to the emergency room to wash him off and better see the burns, but they weren't there. The teen merely had one burn the size of the palm of his hand near his ankle. The rest was the soot from falling into the fire. The boy's parents may have overinflated the sense of danger because he was screaming and yelling and floundering around after he fell into the campfire. I think his anxiety was contagious and made everyone think he must really, really be injured. The boy's family and healthcare professionals looking after him were all relieved when they realized his injuries weren't so serious.
I guess that's a happy story in the end.
I guess. I guess this is another example of like parents just over panicking and.
The first thought when you yell, "I'm burnt," and then you see, you know, black all over his body. I mean, what else are you going to think?
Yeah, I guess. I mean, I think you might want to see the burn though. Like, oh, where are you hurt? You know, like, I might check it out first.
Yeah, but, I mean, I don't know.
That's like this. I was working soccer camp all week, and this poor little kid, he's probably like 6 years old, just got blasted in the face with a ball, and his freaking nose just exploded.
Oh.
And he, like, comes, you know, like, he comes to me with the other coach, and he's like, oh, I'm like, I'll take care of it. Like, I've cleaned up blood a million times, but... Man, like he, you know, he's coming to me. He's got his hands over his face, and blood is just like pouring down his fingers, all over the chair. He had like an Iron Man shirt on, and it was like covered in blood. I was like, "Man, you did a good job." And he's like, "Hey," like he was fine. He was fine.
But you left practice early, so give me 20 sprints.
You don't think you're done, are you?
Yeah.
All right, don't panic if the poop is blue.
Interesting.
Michelle saw another incident last year in which parents panicked a bit too prematurely. A terrified mother brought her infant into the emergency room the day after Independence Day because she thought the baby had contracted some sort of horrible infection. The cause for concern? Bright blue poop. The mother brought doctors the baby diaper in a Ziploc bag. When they opened it, the sweet, fruity smell was overwhelming. The family had been at a picnic the day before when someone had brought a big bowl of blueberries, which the baby never had had before, she said. The infant loved the fruit and ended up eating a handful. When babies eat fruit, it passes through their system quickly. You wind up with this sweet-smelling, dark-colored poop. Said the parents should only be worried if the poop is white, black, or red. All other shades of poop are okay.
So we're good with we're bad with red. We're good with blue. We're bad with white. All
right, right. No, America. No white poo. No black poo. I've had black poo before.
Yeah.
And when I was in Ireland, they called a Guinness poo. Like if you if you had too much Guinness, you have black poo. All right. Last one here. Some safety tips for you, Mike, on this holiday weekend, just in case you get a little crazy later. You have too many wine slushies, and all right. Fireworks are best left to professionals, Coleman said, adding that every year she amputates fingers due to firework accidents. Even the most seemingly innocuous items, such as sparklers, are cause for concern. Sparklers can reach up to 1,200 degrees Fahrenheit, and physicians see sparkler burns over almost every 4th of July.
Interesting.
So, you know. That's,
why did we bring him back? Damn you, Christy!
We're always going to get to him in a minute. Just the quickest touch to a child's hand will give them a pretty significant burn. Another safety concern, Mike, is to keep in mind is to monitor children near water at all times. Every 4th of July, she tends to see at least one patient who's drowned. Be careful with your children around water.
I needed that information. I needed that story to know children can drown.
Yeah, during a pool party or beach outing, there are usually several adults around, but no one particular person who's looking after the kids.
It's okay. His skin is blue like the poop.
They said blue doesn't matter.
Yeah, he doesn't smell fruity for some reason, though. Kind of rank.
Yeah. Well, yeah, I'm not even going through the rest of these. They're just stupid common sense. But those are some tales from the emergency room. Blue poop.
Tales from the emergency room.
I like the bomb squad one, personally. Yeah, and that's pretty.
How can you not like your ticking time bomb, literally?
All right. So we talked a little bit, but Marcelo Balboa...
exists.
One of the coolest guests we've had on... and that was also one of those early guests that was like, oh my God, like we got someone legit and like quick with any effort. Like,
yeah, because I remember he just started to get on Twitter and he was almost like shocked.
We probably got him at the right time. You know, but we ended up getting to meet him, which was cool. Mm-hmm. And just a super humble, down to earth guy. So there's a lot of things going on with the U.S. soccer that I want to talk to him about. So let's get Marcelo on the line.
Hello.
Hey, Marcelo Balboa, what is up?
Not much, buddy. How are you?
I'm doing great. How dare you go out for a bike ride when you have such a
big, no kidding, man.
Big career move ahead of you?
Wait till we call you in a moss.
No, I went mountain biking. That's even worse.
But
nothing like stoppings. About halfway through, you see a buddy of yours, you start talking, and then all of a sudden you get on your bike and it's flat. Like, what the hell going on?
I imagine you got some
amateur,
some amazing trails out where you are. I mean, it's got to be
beautiful trails, man.
Are there hills
in Colorado? Absolutely beautiful.
You're in Colorado, right?
Yes. The only thing I'm going to suggest is make sure you take an extra inner tube.
And a helmet. But
and a helmet, yes.
Yeah. But thanks for coming back on. We've been talking for a while that we wanted to reach out to you and get you back on because, you know, there's a lot of things that have happened in the sport and whatnot, especially regarding American soccer. And plus, we just wanted to get you back on in general. So thanks for giving us a few minutes again.
Anytime, buddy. Anytime.
So I guess the best place to start is, as far as American soccer, we just saw a coaching change again, kind of a coaching change back to the old ways. But I wanted to get your thoughts on the Klinsmann firing and then bringing back Arena. I was all favor for Klinsmann going. I think he played a different formation every game. It was never the same cast of characters, and it just seemed like it was just out of control of me. Like no one ever seemed to get to develop.
I think that's a tough one. You know what? And the only reason I'll say it's a tough one is because when Jurgen came in, Jurgen did a lot of good things.
He did. He started hot.
I think so. I agree. Think so. And I think, like anything else, people still remember the end of your tenure, you know, like he did.
Right.
You're going to remember the Mexico game. You're going to remember things that didn't work out for him.
Right.
I think he took a step forward the way he rebooted and opened up the player pool.
Right.
You know what I mean? I think he's done a lot of good things, you know, throughout where we were. When we talk about progression in coaching, we have to keep going up the ladder.
Right.
And that means keep progressing our players and stuff. And I think Jurgen did a good job of opening up the pool. I think he was able to get games that a lot of people wouldn't be able to get. You know, Italy and Italy.
Right.
Germany and Germany. Holland. And a lot of things like that. Sure, did maybe he make some mistakes along the way? And you know, I think when you start looking at what happened to Martin Vazquez, and you look at stuff like that, you know, I think you wonder what happened.
Right.
But again, listen, I'm not a big fan of a coach taking a national team for longer than 4 to 5 years, and only because it's the same group of players for 4 or 5 years. Very little turnover, and the players start getting used to that message. You know, they keep hearing the same message, and they don't respond anymore. And that's why, look at Bruce Arena. 2002, fantastic. 2006, not so good.
Right.
8-year run, not good. Yeah. Jurgen Klinsmann, Same thing. Great run the first 4 years. He qualified. We got in there. And now after that qualification, it's kind of been bumpy.
So what do you think was his downfall?
4 to 5 years.
What do you think was his downfall?
I think the downfall was the fact that, and if you look at what happened, I think the Mexico game was probably the biggest turning point when all of a sudden we went to 3 in the back.
Yes.
I think that surprised a lot of people. I think some of the player selections that were being put out there, you know, I think kind of hurt him. And again, I think like anything else, listen, as a coach, once you lose 2 or 3 key players, you lose 3 or 4 players in the locker room, I think that's where you get in trouble.
Mm-hmm.
Not saying that Jurgen lost it, but you can definitely see that Michael Bradley turned a little bit the last year, 2 years. You know, Tim Howard turned a little bit. When you start losing key players,
right,
I think you kind of start losing your team little by little.
I mean, it definitely makes sense. My biggest problem with him was like what I was saying, like, it never seemed like we were doing the same thing every game. It seemed like it was always a flip of the coin towards the end. And that's what bothered me. Like, you know, that back four never seemed to be able to get, you know, time together. And I don't know. It just seemed like we changed the formation every game. And that's very frustrating. Yeah. But
Valid point.
But now with Bruce Arena, obviously you know him, but did you have any experience with him? You were with the team till like 2000, right?
Yeah. I played in the Confederations Cup in Mexico.
Okay.
With Bruce Arena.
So tell us about Bruce.
Yeah, I think Bruce is just one of those coaches. First of all, I think he's grown tremendously, you know, as every coach grows.
Right.
When he's had that first time. He's a guy that knows the system. He's a guy that knows the players that belong in the system. And he knows the players, the qualities that he's looking for in a player to play his system. I think the best thing about Bruce, as he's kind of calmed down, he's become more of a player's coach.
Mm-hmm.
Players, he understands the players a little better now, and it's like anything else. There's a progression as coaching, you keep learning. And I think the biggest thing is he lets them be them. He doesn't, it's not as structured, we'll say, as it was with Jurgen, with Bruce.
Okay.
With team meetings all the time and stuff like that.
So it's a little bit more, like you said, more of a player's coach at this point.
Yeah.
When you said that, I thought of Tom Coughlin, like how he came in, like, you know, super scheduled, and then towards the end, he was like, the players loved him. But remember, like, when he first started, like, he was fining guys for being early to meetings. You remember that?
Not early enough. Straight hand.
Yeah. But, I feel like the team's in good hands. The best hands is going to be being so close to the World Cup, you know, bringing someone with, you know, tons of experience. Do you think Bruce is a stopgap and they're looking for someone else, or do you think he's going to be there for quite a while?
Great question. I think one, you have to evaluate if Bruce makes it to the World Cup. That's his first goal.
Yeah. Big point the other day.
I think it's simple. I think if Bruce doesn't make the World Cup, then he gets fired. Simple as that. Because his job was to come in. But that's his job. His job is to help qualify the team. If they don't qualify, then I think right there, Bobby Bruce is done in December. If they qualify, then I think Bruce takes the team to the World Cup, and you see how the team progresses and does in the World Cup. If it's a team that just gets out of the group again and loses in the second round, then I think you evaluate, but I think it's an easier decision.
Mm-hmm.
I think if Bruce Arena gets past that first round and makes it into a quarterfinal, then I think it's a harder decision for Sunil Gulati. Now, does he keep him and sign him for another 4 years, or does he go in a new direction? You know, the better the U.S. does, the harder it becomes for Sunil Gulati.
Yeah. But I guess that's a good problem. I mean, just the thought of not qualifying makes me cringe. Like, I can't even imagine the World Cup coming around and not having us there. It would literally ruin 8 years.
It would have ruined the last 4 years.
Especially in Russia, you got a feeling they would just kind of rub that in, you know.
Exactly.
And now America. Oh, where are they?
Yeah, exactly. Oh my God! I think there'd be a lot of countries that would probably be happy if they didn't qualify.
Yeah,
you know what I mean.
Yeah. So you.
But we're gonna qualify, so I'm not worried about that.
Now you got to do. You just I remember you texted me. You said you had the Ghana game to do. Now are you doing like what you do with the Colorado? You're doing the Spanish announcing.
Yeah, I do the announcing for Univision. I'm the Spanish guy. So I'm the analyst in Spanish for Univision.
Oh, that's awesome. Yeah, I know you did that for the MLS, but I didn't know that you did that for the US team. That's fantastic.
yep.
How awesome.
I have a good time.
Yeah, you got the life, man. Mm. You know, back to beautiful Colorado, announcing the US game.
Yep.
I'll sign up for what you do.
Hey. Yeah, I definitely don't need people to feel sorry for me, that's for sure. I've been, you know what, I look at it this way. I've been very blessed to have been able to play soccer, something I love to do and make a career out of it.
Mm-hmm.
I've been blessed when I retired to have been able to do commentary and to stay around the game of soccer. And now I also coach the U14 Rapids DA team. So I've been very blessed, and I'm thankful every day for what God has given me, because it was a long road to become a professional. But once you made it and you finish your career, you can look back and you can be happy. I'm happy with what I've done and what I've been able to give back to soccer, and still have so much more to give back, because it's given me a family, it's given me a house, it's given me the opportunity to travel, kids, mm-hmm. good friends. So. You know, it's just very, very blessed.
What were your thoughts on the youth soccer coming up, specifically how the U.S. did in the U-20 World Cup?
You know what? I think that for the second round in a row, that again the U.S. loses to eventually the champion or the runner-up. So 2 days less of rest. For the U.S. players. I think the U.S. players did a nice job. I thought they hung in there against Venezuela. They took it to them at the 70th minute when Venezuela got tired. They just, again, they couldn't put the game away.
Right.
So I think that's the biggest problem, you know what I mean?
Definitely.
So, I think that's the biggest.
Well, that's
the biggest thing to me.
Let's definitely let that lead into the men's team with Pulisic. So,
Yeah.
I mean, we got a kid that looks like he's the real deal. Like he's, you know,
yeah.
I mean, he plays composed, he finishes, he seems to be involved in everything. And it's just an amazing, and you know, he's playing with high level teams. Now, do you see more of that coming? Do you see, like, I feel like some countries, they have 5, 6, 7, 8 Pulisic all over the world. Now we ain't got the one guy, but do you see the rest of the U.S. following suit? Are there guys that we're going to start seeing left and right, like joining the team soon? Or do you still think he's just the one guy we got?
You know what? Let's start with, we've never had a Pulisic in the kitchen.
Yep.
So I think this kid could be the first kid when you look at making a splash in the world soccer. I think this kid could be the first kid that could be that kid.
I agree.
I mean, we've seen what he can do in Champions League. You know, I think that it's been great. We've had a lot of guys make a huge impact on the national team
mm-hmm.
and in MLS, but nothing like what Pulisic is doing. You know what I mean? If you want to go back to Landon Donovan, Landon made a huge splash here in the United States in MLS.
Yep.
And on the national team at the World Cup, but never in an international club. That's, you know what I mean? And
yep.
I think that's the difference. I think Pulisic is not going to be a kid that's gonna play in MLS, not for a long time. I think this kid is going to be one of those kids. If he keeps progressing, I hate to put a huge label
right.
on a kid and put that pressure, but he does, and we've seen the potential he has to be that kid that can make a huge splash for American soccer on the world stage.
He plays like a star. You know, he plays like he's been there. Like, just his composure to me is like something I noticed. Like, he plays like a leader on there. Like, and the, you know, he wants the ball. He's always involved, and he seems like he's got the mentality for it.
Yep. I agree. But I think playing at Dortmund,
yes,
and playing every day in that environment,
mm-hmm.
I think is what's making him better and better and better. You know what I mean? And the fact that he's playing Champions League. And the fact that he's playing the German Cup and he's playing in the Bundesliga.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, the environment that kid's in day in and day out, you can't replicate that here in the United States. You can't. It's just not possible. So the environment and the advantage that kid has of being there day in and day out and getting to play more games, becoming a starter, you know what I mean? I think, like, again, I think if this kid stays humble and he stays, you know, with the right mindset and works hard and keeps doing everything he's doing, you know, I'm not going to put him in a Messi and right. and a Ronaldo category. Well, yeah. I think that's a special Zidane and those guys. But I tell you what, man, I'm excited to see what he can do in the next 10 years.
I mean, it's kind of interesting. The second how he's rising, everybody does comparisons to Freddie Adu and kind of go, oh, hope that doesn't happen. What do you think was the biggest thing that hurt Freddie where he didn't rise to that next level?
The biggest thing I think that hurt Freddie is he believed the hype.
Yeah. Between the ears.
I think that's the biggest thing. I mean, let's be honest. I mean, we blew this kid up.
Right.
We put him in MLS. He was okay.
Mm-hmm.
If I'm wrong, tell me. He was okay. He wasn't above average. He wasn't extraordinary.
No.
He was okay.
Mm-hmm.
He was okay. I think we put so much pressure and made this kid the marketing tool that he had no chance of living up to who everybody thought he was going to be. And especially when you put him in a commercial with Pele. That, come on.
Let's just be serious.
Yeah, let's just be realistic. The kid was playing with kids and he was better than those kids. And at every level you've got to be able to perform, you got to get better and better and better. So mm-hmm. he was good with the under 20s. When he got to the MLS, I don't think he was above average. He was average in MLS. You know what I mean? And when he got to the national team, he was okay.
Yeah.
But I never thought this kid, I never saw this kid and thought to myself, man, this kid's going to be a star.
Right.
I saw Pulisic, and when you see him play, you say to yourself, man, that kid's going to play. Jack Harrison from NYCFC, you see that kid play, you mm-hmm. say, damn, that
yep.
kid's got something. You know what I mean? There's kids in this league that you look at and you say, man, this kid, Lennon, from Real Salt Lake, you watch him play and you think, wow, you saw him play with the under-20, you think to yourself, man, that kid's got something, you know what I mean?
Right.
I was never the big guy that saw Freddie do and said, oh, yeah. I was never on that hype train.
I was thinking as you were saying that, you know, like, you know, Klinsmann, I remember making statements about players playing overseas and how much he wanted to. Where do you think the fine line is? You want Americans playing American soccer, but we also know that, you know, playing at Dortmund and places like that is super high level. So where do you see, like, the fine line of, plus you want your guys getting playing time, you know? So,
yeah.
Like, it's like, yeah, they can go to some Premier League team and sit on the bench all the time. So what do you think players should be doing?
They need to play. Let's be straight up and honest.
Yep.
But I think to build a team that's going to be very competitive in a World Cup, you've got to have a good mixture of guys that are in Europe that are playing full time, and you got guys in MLS that are playing full time. You know what I mean? I think there's got to be a healthy balance of that.
Mm-hmm.
Having European guys that are not playing, that are sitting on the bench, really aren't going to help you because they're not informed. You've got to get them in shape. You've got to get their touch back. You know, you see the difference of a Fabian Johnson who's playing every day. You see the difference of a Pulisic who's playing every day. You see the difference of a Bobby Woods who's playing every day. You know what I mean? There's guys, John Brooks is playing every day. So I think you got to look at that healthy balance. And here's the important thing for me. I want guys that are going to wear the national team jersey with pride and heart and soul.
Yep.
Not guys that are just wearing it. Not just guys that are wearing it because they want to play in a World Cup.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? So I think that's important too. You got to have guys that are, and I think Bruce said it well a long time ago, when you wear the shirt, you've got to be able to fight for that flag and fight for your country and fight for this team. And those are the kind of guys you want on the field.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. Just real quick, how do you think of that? I love that Gold Cup jersey that came out. I think it's phenomenal.
You know what? The Barcelona, I love it.
The stripes, I like it.
It reminds me a little bit of Barcelona. It's a different look for the national team. I love it. And I like that it's only a limited edition. It's only for Gold Cup.
See, I don't like that because I went to go order it today and it was $150. That's why. Yeah. But I think it's the best look we've had in quite a while. It's different than... I mean, I feel like the jerseys we had before that, where everybody has them, you know, like the different colored sleeves, the Nike ones. I feel like they definitely stepped out of the box.
Yep.
Love it. But
I agree with you.
But what about the World Cup? It's coming up. Do you have any involvement in that? Are you going to be calling any kind of games for Univision and whatnot in the World Cup, or are you just going to be home?
Univision is, unfortunately, Univision doesn't have the World Cup this year. Telemundo does.
Ah.
So I'm hoping to be involved. I've been talked to by a certain group that may have that are interested in me doing some World Cup games, especially the Hispanic teams,
right?
Be it Mexico and those groups. So I'm hoping to be involved with World Cup, be it TV or be it radio.
No, that'd be awesome. Trip to Russia. Now, I was thinking, you said you were coaching, what did you say, U14?
The U14 Rapids D18, yeah. Okay, the developmental academy team.
That sounds, like, I was coaching actually this morning at a camp, and I was talking to coach, like, and I would love to hear your perspective. With, like, the no heading, like, under 12 years old, I'm pretty sure that's national now. I know in Jersey, it's they don't really want kids heading the ball under that. Do you see that, like, bleeding into our game, like, affecting them? Like, the quality? Like, one of our biggest things has always been in the air and set pieces. Do you see that becoming a setback, or do you think it's just going to, you know, not really have any effect?
No. Here's the thing. I think that rule came into effect because a lot of youth clubs, when a coach doesn't know much about soccer, the first thing they rely on is fitness, passing the ball and heading the ball.
Yep.
So when coaches don't know, next thing you know, kids are heading the ball for a half hour, right, and that's not good. So, I don't think it's going to be a hindrance. I get the fact that they're trying to protect kids. I get that whole fact. It's just a matter of doing it the right way. And it takes that, you know, by the time they get to 13, 14, 15, they start getting it a little more. So I don't think it's going to be a hindrance. I've seen the ball in a game with a U12 when the ball's in the air, the kid's headed anyway.
Mm-hmm.
So I just think it's eliminating in practice a lot of coaches forgetting that they're doing heading. And next thing you know, it's been a half hour and the kid's done 100 headers. You know?
Good point. I didn't really think of it that way.
Yeah. You can always tell a coach, unfortunately, that they don't know a lot. First thing they're doing is the first 20 to 30 minutes of practice with fitness. And they're running, and they're running, and next thing they come back, and then they're passing, and then they're heading, and then they go straight into a game. So, you know what I mean? And this, but this is where we're getting better. The education that U.S. Soccer is doing, the education that the NSCAA is doing. You know, the coaches, and I'm talking back in the old days, not now. Back in the old days, that's what coaches relied on. So nowadays, you can walk out to a practice, and coaches are so educated that they've gone through some sort of training. The club teams have done some sort of training that their practices are structured. But 10 years ago, you could easily tell a team by fitness, then heading, and then passing, and then the game. You always knew back in the old days.
What are your thoughts right now on the development academies and with the players coming out with the home player rule? Are you seeing guys coming in that are diamonds in the rough, or just are they more coming in as like a solid fill-in player?
You know, it's tough. It's tough because if you're going to sign a homegrown kid, you want him to be special. You want him to be able to play, and you want him to get some playing time with the first team. You know what I mean? That's why you're signing a kid like that. So,
right.
I think that, you know, I think it's sometimes it's a crapshoot. You never know how a kid does. You know, we signed Shane O'Neill, and he went straight basically from high school academy to playing with the first team and training with the first team. So I think once you throw a kid into the fire, you see the potential, and you hope you can nurture that to become at the next level. But as for every kid you pick here, there's always a mistake here. So it's a tough one. It's a crapshoot to see how kids develop when they get to a higher level. Can they go? Because you look at the potential. Does this kid have the potential to play on that first team? And you put him in that situation, and you got to give him time to develop and get used to it, and then you got to hope he can develop. And then there's certain kids that you look at, and they just naturally get it, and they move on. Look at Courtney Ford. You know, he was a homegrown. He went to college. He came out of college, and he's adapted really quick to MLS soccer. Still makes mistakes because he's a rookie. We get that. Those are normal things. But the athleticism that kid has,
right?
You know what I mean? You can't teach that. You can teach the other sides of the game.
Now, where do you, like, I was thinking about that. We had the Atlanta Hawks announcer come on a couple weeks ago, or maybe a couple months ago, but I've called a couple stupid, like, you know, local hockey games and stuff like that, but I always like to get in the head of, you know, a commentator and whatnot. And now you go from, you know, your your Colorado team that I'm sure you know like the back of your hand. But then when you go over to, say, you go do a game like U.S. Ghana, or you go do even a game in
Spain,
how much research is going into, like, how much do you have to freshen yourself up? Like, do you just show up and you're good to go, or are you researching the week before?
No, not even. The good thing is I've been doing the U.S. team for a while, so right. I know the players.
Right.
I know where they play, you know what I mean? Where you recap, you know, if they got traded or what's going on, if they've moved positions. Like Graham Susi, you know, he used to be a winger. Mm-hmm. Now he's a right fullback for KC. So you know those kind of things. You know that Jonathan Brooks all of a sudden just signed a new contract, highest transfer of ever any American at $22 million. You know these kind of things.
Right.
The hard part is trying to get information on the other team. Like
that's
Ghana.
What I mean. Yeah.
The good thing is I was able to watch Wednesday night. I was able to watch Mexico, and I was able to watch Ghana play. So there's half your research because you're watching the game. You see the tendencies. You see players, positions. And then now they give you a roster. Now you've got to go through pronunciations and hope you don't screw some guy's name up horribly. That's the important part.
Right.
And then you pray to God that the lineup, the numbers and the names they sent you match up to the game day roster.
Yep.
It's very hard to get information sometimes from teams that are coming from Europe or South America to give us information. So we're scrambling up until the last day, to the day of the game, trying to get information from them. We know the players, and you can do that research, but you don't know lineup, you don't know positions. You can kind of start guessing at where players will play.
Mm-hmm.
So it's quite a bit of studying. If I know I've got Ghana, and in a month from now, then I'll start studying. Like, I knew the U.S. has Panama, so I've known Panama for a while. So you look at their players, you look at their roster, where they're playing, you know, and stuff like that. Tendencies. I've got some games taped from Panama that I go back and watch. So yeah, there's a lot of not so much on the U.S. because I get to watch practice, and I know the press officer Michael Cameron. He gives us information on the players. They give us game notes, but it's the opposing team that's the hard trying to get information.
Yeah, I had to do this hockey tournament once, and I show up and they just hand me like a stack full of rosters and like their stats, and it's like. And then the viewpoint was like from like outside of the rink, like looking down, so you could only see one side. It was really hard, like trying to get people. By the time you pronounce their name, you look up and the puck's like hit three other people before you know it. It's like, you know, it's pretty tough. But I mean, I was always curious, like on the professional level, how much prep goes into that.
Well, think about it. If you're not doing the U.S., I've got to learn 36 names.
Yeah, yeah.
And they're always constantly moving, and sometimes you're in an awful position you can't see. So I kind of wish sometimes I could do tennis because I know who's on what side of the court, who has the ball, you know what I mean? I'm okay with that. It's hockey with its quick switches and in and out, and the line changes. Oh, my Lord.
Now,
good luck.
Yeah, now with soccer, with no breaks, I mean, I'm kind of interested in – is it better for you that there's no like real breaks where you can just concentrate on the action, or is it a little set off like if you have like a funny story or whatever? Usually like all the NFL announcers, you get a break and they'll tell some funny story about some player or something like that, where here you got to concentrate on the game nonstop mostly.
I'm going to say this to you. Thank goodness for the play-by-play guy.
Yeah.
Thank goodness for that, because that's his job. His job is to tell the story. His job is to tell these kind of things. The sideline reporter's job is to do that. My job is to analyze the game and give personal experience I have, or if I know the guy and I've got a story about him, I can contribute. But I try not to get into those, because when you get into storytelling, you've got some of the best storytellers in sports and soccer. You do.
Yeah.
Because they have to be able to tell you a story and interweave it between the ball moving down the field and the action that's going on the field, and tell you a story as quick as they can and as precise as they can.
It's true. You got to be jack of all trades. Now,
we don't have time like baseball. We don't have time, even hockey, when they try to tell the stories. Maybe in a commercial timeout when they come back, there's a few seconds, but soccer, very difficult.
Yeah. Well, there's my dog. Oh, he's a nutcase. He appears on every episode no matter what, because somehow he, you know, there's a squirrel or something. But Let me ask you, the MLS has expanded. The MLS seems, you know, it seems to be a profitable league. It's, you know, new teams all the time. It's gaining interest more and more. How do you feel of the state of MLS right now?
I gotta say, I'm feeling pretty good.
Yep.
You know, if you look at what Atlanta's doing.
Yep.
The way they've come into the league. You know, you look at what Seattle did last year and their fan base.
Oh God, it looks fun out
you
there.
You know, I think. Yeah, you know what? It's Portland, my lord. What Portland's doing out there. You know what I mean? So I think that. I think it's moving in the right direction. I think the fans and the players that they're signing are getting better. Look what Dallas does with their young players and how they bring them into the system. The only thing that's disappointing to me is the way some teams are run and how they chill, like what happened to Dominic Kinnear in San Jose.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's the oddest thing, that you fire a coach and you come out and say, we wanted to fire him on a high. You know, after a win and a two or three game loss. Okay, one, Dominic Kinnear has been in this league forever. You may want to treat a guy like that with a little bit more respect.
Right.
You know what I mean? And the fact that you don't want him, you don't want Dominic Kinnear, and this was from what we heard, they didn't want Dominic Kinnear and John Spencer to get on a two or three game run because then it's too hard to fire him. So you cut them off at the balls before that team is, you know what I mean? It's just kind of weird.
It's weird.
The way they've treated that whole situation. That's my biggest problem sometimes, is the way the lack of respect from presidents like that and how they treat their coaches. I get Dominic hasn't had a great year, but you know what? They're in a playoff position. They're winning right now. They're in a pretty good position, fourth place they were. So it's kind of odd to me.
I think it's got to be cool for you to see, you know, from where you started, you know, in America to now, to see just like the overall education of fans and just how much they know about the game and how into it they are. And like, you know, in hindsight, it probably feels like a long time, but you know, in history, it's just a blip on the radar. What, you know, 20 years, just how far it's come and how far it's going. Where do you see like the exposure to fans going? Like, is it just going to get more? Do you think we've reached the peak? Like, how do you feel about that?
It's just going to keep growing here in the United States.
I agree.
It's just going to keep growing. The fans, how educated they are and how knowledgeable they are about soccer,
mm-hmm.
It's fantastic. You look at the American Outlaws group and all the chapters they have all over the United States and how they travel with the teams. You know, and if you go to every stadium, you know, each stadium has a, you know, the Houston Dynamos, the LA Galaxy, and everybody has their supporters group.
Yep.
And it's fantastic to see how they're developing, how they're growing, and how it's moving in the right direction. And you know what? It's unfortunate for us because our time has passed, and we didn't get to play in an opportunity like we don't get to play in a Portland or in a Seattle where it's packed like that in that kind of environment. But I gotta say, man, I'm so happy to be able to still be involved in the league as a broadcaster and to see those things and to go to games in Portland and to see the atmosphere there. And see how much it's grown, and it's just going to keep growing.
Yeah, but it seems like Don Garber's really pushing for making the league one of the top tiers throughout, not only just in soccer, but in sports in the United States to begin with. Out of curiosity, for the expansion teams, I know he's aiming for about 28. Do you feel that would help the league more to use established teams in like USL, like Cincinnati, or grow a new home base in some other city that's aching for a team?
You know what? If Cincinnati can keep drawing 30,000 people and do 1,000 people march, I think it was they showed on Twitter.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's much easier having a franchise that is established and that has shown what they can do day in and day out. And they have Seattle had a foundation. They had an NSL team. Portland, you know what I mean? You look at what Sacramento's doing. You look at what Cincinnati's doing. You say to yourself, what an easy, if financially, if they have everything you need with the fan base they have, what an easy decision that is for Don Garber to say, you know what, we want Cincinnati. If they can draw 30,000 people every day,
yep,
like Minnesota's drawing, stuff like that, how can you say no to a team that's already established? They're like I said, the only thing you have to make sure 100%, which Don Garber's done a great job, is to make sure that financially they're stable and they're able to bring a stadium and financially are stable enough to be able to be an MLS. Because to me, it's important that stadium, putting it in the right place, I think is a huge thing. And then again, I think what Atlanta's done, they put their money where their mouth is. They talked about being competitive. They talked about playing pretty soccer. They had no problem spending money the way they spend money. And look at where they're at. They're one of the most attractive, exciting teams to see and to watch on MLS Live.
Yeah, I mean, the whole Atlanta thing is pretty cool. It's like they're so young. Yeah. It's amazing how young and new they are. You don't see that in any sport, you know, like them come in like that. But outside of soccer, when you turn your soccer brain off and you know, you live in Colorado. What
When's kind
of,
that?
Yeah. Well, I don't know. But
when you're studying names from Ghana,
when you're not studying Ghana names, what are you doing out there? I know today you said you were out hiking and biking, and what do you do for fun?
Oh my Lord, I play golf.
Any good?
I play golf. You know what? until I did my shoulder, I was good.
Yeah.
Now that I've done my shoulder, not so good anymore. I love to play golf. I love playing golf, and it depends on the day. I can shoot, say, 80, or I can shoot a 95. You just never know with me.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? Love that. Just love to be outside.
Yeah. Well, that's, you picked the right state to live in.
So nice. Yeah, exactly. You know what I mean? It's just when I do have time, I've learned that I'm turning 50 this year, and I want to make life an adventure. So anytime I get an opportunity to do something that I've never done before, you know, I take it. So 2 years ago, I went skydiving. Oh. You know what I mean? Mm. So it's just things that you can take. Here the other day, we went for a 10-mile hike. But at the end of it, there's a place called Uzo Falls. It's a huge fall that walks. If you look on Facebook, I put a picture on there.
Uh-huh.
It's ridiculous. Things that you've got so many beautiful things in the state. Instead of sitting on the couch,
right?
I try to get myself and my kids out and go do something.
Yeah, I mean, that's the right way to look at it. I mean, do you ever get to play anymore? You ever get jump in with the guys or the kids?
I pull my hamstring all the time. Nah, you know what? I play on Sundays in a men's league, but it's no tackling, thank God.
Yeah.
You can't tackle. You know, you can bump and push. I used to play every Wednesday, futsal.
Right.
But I don't have time anymore because coaching the DA boys is 5 days a week.
Yep.
With Colorado, so I don't have a lot of time. But I try to get out as much as I'm stupid enough that I even think I can play with the 14-year-olds, and they run circles around me.
Do you live out your striker dreams in the men's league? Yeah.
I live out my attacking midfield role.
There you go.
Yes. I did say when they asked me to play.
Yep.
I'm like 100% under one condition. I do not want to play center back. And they're like, whatever, dude. They're like, can you play in the midfield? And I'm like, rock on, I'm in. So yeah.
Yeah, I mean, you always see that, guys.
I don't want to defend anymore.
Yeah. Who? Yeah. I mean, you know, you did what 20, 30 years of defending.
You
want to see you playing the number 9 role.
Any requests?
I try to play. I don't sprint that much, so we have another guy who's a little. It's over 40. This guy's 42. I'm 49. So I play the 10.
Okay.
He plays the 9 that can sprint. I spring him in.
That's awesome. Are they all? Is it like all guys who used to play, or is it just like a local men's league?
You know, it's mixed.
Right.
It's mixed. There's not a lot of former players, but there's a lot. There's a few college players.
Mm-hmm.
There's a few guys that played soccer their whole lives, just never made it to a certain point. So, and there's guys that have never played soccer before that have come on and have played for the last 5 or 6 years and gotten 100 times better. So it's fun. It was frustrating sometimes, but it's fun.
Any requests for bicycle kicks during these games?
Do it again.
I'll give you a funny story. I will not do a bicycle kick because I figured, you know what, only special occasions if it comes right. The other day I'm doing my camp, and I got to go, and the kid's like, can you do a bike? Come on, bike. And when you got 60 kids yelling at you to do a bike, I'm like, sure, whatever, give me a ball.
Yep.
Well, I did it so fast I forgot I had my keys and the whistle in my hand. I throw the ball up, and I go to put my hand down. Yeah. I have no hand because the keys are in my hand. So I land right, first time ever, ever, that I've rushed through this to do it. Scored in the corner. The kids were going crazy. I couldn't feel my arm. I landed on my arm. I heard a pop. I heard a pull. And I got up and I was like, yeah. And I walked off the field. I said to my son, I think I hurt my arm. Now it's been a month and it still hurts and I can't do anything with it. So.
Did you show no pain until
Lesson
you got
learned.
To the car?
Did you show no pain.
Yep.
None.
That's the way to do it.
None.
Nothing to see here. Good night, guys. You know.
The only one that knew something was my son because he kind of knows me. So he kind of knows, you know, he's like, hey, Dad, are you okay? I'm like, yeah, great, buddy, no problem, man. I went home and he's like, Dad, you're not okay, are you? And I'm like, nope.
How old are your kids?
Good.
How old are your kids?
My kid is 19 and 16.
Are they invested in the game or are they just, you know? They
play soccer. He plays intramurals at school and he enjoys it. He loves it.
That's awesome. So before we get out of here, anything we should be looking forward to from you? Any projects or things we should be looking out for?
This month we'll be covering all the games for Univision.
Yep.
For Gold Cup. That'd be awesome. And then, like I said, Friday night soccer on Univision. That's what I do. Maybe going to Ireland, which would be kind of cool with my 04 boys from the Rapids to take them there. And then hopefully at the end or the beginning of next year, they're talking about doing another soccer superstars reality show, which would be kind of cool. But we'll see.
What is that on?
Yeah. They haven't decided yet. It used to be on Nickelodeon, and now it looks like it may be moved to another station. So,
oh, that'd be awesome.
I just see him locked in the house, and everybody complaining about Alexi.
Do a bike.
No bike. I'm done, fellas.
Yeah, I think it's time to retire the bikes. Marcelo, thanks
exactly.
so much. Thanks so much for giving
Anytime,
us
boys.
For giving us a few minutes, man. I'm sending out your shirt this week, by the way.
Yes, very cool. Thank you. As soon as I get it, I'll take a picture.
Awesome. Really cool. The guy just gives us, like, I don't know, 40 minutes there, you know? Like, it's just...
Not blinking an eye, truthful about stuff, talks about different things.
Good sense of humor.
Oh, yeah.
But
stuff we look for in guests.
You know, like, that was... I look back on the podcast, that's, like, my favorite episode. You know, top whatever, you know, top five. And, you know, like, this one is just as good the second time around. It's pretty awesome. So with that, we're going to take a quick break, and we're going to be back with the love of my life, Sharon Alexander.
Can't wait.
All right. So I'm getting nervous.
Why do you dress up and put on cologne? You do know this is a phone interview, right?
Well, I don't know. I feel like it's like karma. Like you feel good, look good, feel good. You know, the good things happen to you.
Oh, okay. All right. So, that's interesting.
I'm just a little nervous. It's like sitting. This is gonna be like talking to a high school crush again. Uh-huh. You know, like
this
years
is
later.
Like Charlie Brown's redheaded girl.
We're going to call across the pond here over to the UK. One of our favorite guests of all time. It's about time we caught back. We were supposed to, well, we'll get into that in a minute. Mm-hmm. But we were supposed to catch up with her a few months ago. We'll get into why. What happened?
Sexy song. Here we go.
Oh, man, sexy so song. Nervous.
Here we go. She might have gone to bed early.
She's setting me up.
Good evening.
Oh, Sharon.
Hello, dear.
Oh, man. I said I was nervous all day. It's like calling like an old high school crush from me.
Aren't you a bit early? You said 10 o'clock.
Well, it's only 4 o'clock here where we are.
And I got a message to say, could we do it at 10 o'clock?
Yes. For you.
No worries. I'm awake. No worries.
Well, you said that you would, this old lady will stay awake past her bedtime for us.
Well, yeah, so it's 10 o'clock. It's not 10 o'clock yet, so. Don't worry.
What, her bedtime and cocoa? Does this mean you have cocoa every night?
It depends on the type of cocoa.
Yeah, Scott, it's a Tuesday. You know that it's not Cocoa Day.
Not Cocoa Tuesdays?
No.
Cocoa Monday. But Sharon, how you been? Welcome back to the Verbal Shenanigans Show. It's been over a year. It's been a long time.
Been a long time, yeah.
So what is going on in the world of Sharon Alexander? Is sumo still, you know, first and foremost in your life, or what's going on?
I completely retired this year.
What?
Oh, yeah.
Why?
Well, one, I'm a grandmother. Two, I'm 52. And I don't bounce back as I used to.
Hmm. They should have, like, the golf, they have the seniors tour. They should have a senior sumo
Senior sumo.
Yeah. Yeah, keep the blood flowing, you know?
True, but, yeah, well, until they introduce something like that, I realize I need to stop.
Well, you know, we'd be there to support you. We could start the senior sumo circuit. I just don't know how many competitors you'd have, but... So you're officially retired. So grandma's not a sumo wrestler anymore.
I am now officially retired, Grandma Sharon.
So did you have like a last match? Did you have like a send off?
I had a last match in Milan.
Did you win?
June the third.
Oh, so
year.
Just about a month ago.
Yeah, just a month ago
was literally a month ago.
Last fight.
Okay, and how'd it go?
I came home with a bronze medal in the heavyweight.
All right. Oh. All right. It's not
went
shabby.
Out with the trophy. Did you go into the fight saying that you were going to retire, or was it after the fight you figured that's it?
It was after the fight because I, you know, there are a lot of younger women now that were there. They weren't the newer women, younger women, much more, you know, even though it's amateur, they're much more. They're prepared to do anything to win.
Just so.
And,
now, you go into a tournament like that. How many women compete?
There were quite a lot of women this year. But going things like going for my throat. Ooh. Yeah, I'm not really into that.
So you're saying sumo is getting too vicious?
Yes. Some of the women are prepared, you know, to do anything. And it's not. For me, you know, sumo is an honorable sport. Win or lose, you should accept that. It's not a matter of doing anything and anything to win. But that's the kind of world that we live in. So I thought, you know what, I need to stop. Let them enjoy themselves. I've had just over 10 years, I've made so many friends, and I've done so many things. Sumo's opened up so many doors for me. So I think it's time to gently step down.
Mm-hmm. Do you have plans to stay with the sport at all or be involved in it?
I got loads of friends. I'm sure that they'll contact me, and they said, you know, could I come over? Like if they have judging sessions when they do give medals and things like that. You know, just to come over for the party. I was still invited for the World Games in Poland.
All right.
But it's just that I had other commitments here in England that I couldn't, not compete, just to go out to Poland. But I've been to Poland. It's a beautiful country. And I enjoyed myself there. And I hope to do it and, you know, go again.
I could see you doing the sumo play-by-play. I could see you being like the color commentator.
But unfortunately my Japanese is not so good on the moves. They are some very long and difficult names.
You could be like the English announcers, like Scott, the English feed.
Scott, your tongue is very talented. Maybe you could work with her.
Yes, the two, me and you, yeah. Like you could be the commentator and I'll be like the color guy and we'll just, you know, announce sumo together, holding hands. I mean, no.
What fun. on top of that, I suppose the heaviest sportswoman in the world is now 150 kilos.
Wow. So how much weight have you lost?
Totally, just over 50 kilos.
50 kilos, and how many pounds is that? That's about...
330.
You have lost 330 pounds?
I don't look like a stick, so don't even think to get that in your mind.
Wait, 330 pounds? Is that correct?
150 kilos is 330 pounds. I just put it in Google.
So what did you start losing the weight before your last match, or is this all in the last month?
No, over the last, I mean, I know I spoke to you just over a year ago, but I was, before that, I was caring for my mother.
Mm-hmm.
And then my mother passed away quite suddenly on her birthday. And the weight really started going down from 2014. And then I immediately began to look after my father. And he was fine until last year, and he deteriorated very fast. And he passed away at Christmas. So it's a combination of those things. And me falling down the stairs, that puts a little bit of a strain. So the whole thing altogether, it's not the weight loss. I feel the best I've felt in more than 20 years right now.
I was going to say you lost a very large person.
Yeah. Looking at her Wikipedia, they listed her at 203.2 kilograms. So that is. Or 448 pounds, so it's about 100 pounds loss of weight.
100 pounds
under
lost.
18.
Good for you.
Good for you.
I mean, I'm guessing that's got to be pretty, now that you don't need weight like as far as you would for sumo, I'm guessing it's probably okay. Just about losing weight and getting healthier, correct?
Yes, it is. And enjoying to be a grandmother so that I can at least take my, I already have a grandson and I have another grandchild on the way.
Okay.
So
awesome.
Hey, I'm probably going to be busy doing other stuff anyway.
I just love the fact that your grandchildren could be like, my grandma did sumo wrestling.
Yeah.
Like, no, they're probably like, yeah, okay. And then they probably just say, okay, Google it.
Uh-huh.
And then...
What's that? Your grandma baked a cake? Huh, yeah. Interesting.
My grandma ate 12 and then beat someone's ass in a tournament.
I have been told I'm a very imposing woman, even at 6 foot tall. So,
well,
even with the weight loss.
So,
yeah.
we were supposed to have you back on months and months ago. We were going to do almost a sumo cast with Emmanuel Yarbrough. And he, you said, I even had the message here, so it was December 2015, so it was a while ago.
Yeah.
And you said he had passed away. Now, were you guys close?
We've never met, but we'd spoken many times.
Right.
And we'd spoken, you know, like on Skype or Messenger. I think it was about 3 days before. I was just completely shocked.
Right.
That's took a long time to get over that, mostly because it's quite frightening because everyone thinks about his size and thinks obviously he was huge and it probably spiraled out of control, so he wasn't able to do much. Because I remember him saying that there were times when he couldn't even walk to the post box, which was like 50 yards down the road.
Wow.
Yeah.
Those things bearing in mind, I've also got other friends who who've also passed away through sumo wrestling, but many different things. But it's just that their young age.
Right.
That's the big thing for me. I mean, Emmanuel was like 52. Randy was 43. Mm. And everyone is just looking at their size. But these people were still sports people. You know, they were doing a lot more than I ever did as a human being and a big person. So I would be lying if I didn't say that was at the forefront of my mind, that I need to kind of really be looking at my diet, looking at myself, looking at how I'm feeling. Right. And,
No, let me ask you, I remember last time we talked, you were talking about, like, just how much you guys would eat and prepare. Like, now that you've lost so much weight, is your meals very comparable to what anybody else would eat? Like, a, you know, just a normal
meal? Yes, I would say they're quite normal because I found myself saying, I'm actually tired of eating or chewing, rather not eating, chewing. Mm-hmm. I get something on the plate and it's like, I see it and I go, oh yeah, I want loads of that. Get it. But finishing it has been very, very difficult. The last, I suppose, mostly since my father passed away at Christmas, has made it even harder. I very don't finish a meal. I always leave something on the plate. So over the time, the weight has been dropping off. And then, I just found myself weighing myself last month and coming up at 147 kilos, but I wasn't too well. So I've put a little bit back on, but I feel better.
Oh, that's
cool. It was a shock because I haven't been that weight for over 20 years.
Now, let me ask you, since you're now stopping with your training and everything, are you finding that some parts of your body that was hurting is no longer hurting, or is it the other way where you might have been keeping the adrenaline up and you're noticing like a knee aching or anything like that?
What I'm finding, which I don't like, is that my body has become flabby. Mm. Where I was at my heaviest, muscle, it was defined, you could see it, everything was solid. Now, obviously, with not training and not doing anything, gosh, I must be like the Pillsbury Doughboy. It's just, you know, just circle tires, just rolls of fat. So,
oh, there's no way. I think you're just stunning.
I mean, I'm doing the swimming, I'm doing the walking, but I don't think it's ever going to be back to what it was, mm-hmm. you know, when I was going to the gym. You know, when you think I could deadlift 120 kilos, now I struggle, you know, sometimes with some shopping bags, you're thinking, oh, that, these are too heavy. Yeah, it's, you know, it's to keep on doing something. Oh! Hold on, guys. That was my daughter calling.
Oh, I thought you were getting zapped or something.
I thought it was like a UK doorbell there for a minute.
Yeah, that's my ringtone. That's my ringtone. Yeah, but I feel a lot better. I'm also I'm going onto a program looking for love called First Dates.
What? So, hey. Wait, what?
Breaking yeah. news.
Wait a minute. Slow down. And deliver this news softly because it's going to hurt. Go ahead.
I'm now looking for love, so I'm going to try out on a program called First Dates.
What do you mean by a program? Like an app or like you're going on a show? Or what's
no, it's an actual TV program.
Oh, man. And you didn't contact me about this at all.
Well, they have to accept my application. I put it in. I mean, they might turn around and say they can't find anybody suitable for me, but hey, I'm just trying.
Oh my God, you would be great on television. I feel like your sense of humor would definitely make a very funny TV show. Is this a show in England or?
Yes, it is. It's in the UK.
If you want to fill out the gap.
Oh yeah!
I suppose as long as they don't bring a box of dwarfs,
that'd be great reality television. I'm sorry, I want to see that.
Please don't be offended if you're below 5 foot tall, but no, no, no.
Maybe like you could date like a professional wrestler, like you know, like a an old professional wrestler dates a sumo wrestler. I see sitcom written all over that. Mm.
And we fight for love every night.
Exactly.
That'd be an awesome elimination chamber there.
Oh my goodness. Well, let's hope they accept my application.
I'm waiting for this to happen. Now, did you apply already?
Did I? Yes, I've applied.
Oh, okay. All right. Well, I'm not going to be happy with whoever you find, so I'm just telling you that. It's like no one's good enough for my Sharon.
I don't know. They people are always saying that I am, I intimidate, as I've told you from before. The English men are very intimidated by my height, my size.
I'm not intimidated.
And then when they find out I've done sumo wrestling, they kind of scurry away, so...
I'm not intimidated. I want to have a steel cage match. Mm. Me versus you. I'm going to lose on purpose.
Mm-hmm. Oh, I can't get over the top.
It's those English men. They're afraid.
Yeah.
Not these Americans. It's July 4th tomorrow, so... Mm. But anyway, I think Mike's got a game for us to play.
Yeah, I got a little small thing here. I basically come up with some annoying scenarios, and I'd like you to tell me which one you would prefer to go through.
Okay.
Scenarios just like in life? Or?
Yeah.
Okay.
Like, I'll give you an example. Would you rather have bad weather on a vacation or deal with beautiful weather being stuck in work?
Bad weather on vacation.
Oh, no?
Yeah.
Because I'm still on vacation. I can figure it out. Thanks. I'm not at work, so it doesn't matter. I mean, I've had bad weather on vacation. It's still fun.
All right.
There's still loads to do.
Exactly.
I have loads to do.
Oh, so we got a match so far.
See, so far, me and Sharon, one, and one.
All right. What would aggravate you more? Somebody telling inappropriate stories in front of your parents or in front of young children?
What was that last part about young children?
Which would you get more annoyed by? Somebody telling an inappropriate story in front of your parents or in front of younger children?
All right, you go first, Sharon.
In front of younger children.
I agree. I mean, especially like once you're a certain age, even though they're your parents, you have to realize that you're an adult too. So if they're telling an inappropriate story, you know what? Your parents have seen everything and heard everything.
Sometimes, That's right.
Sometimes we like to pretend they haven't, but...
Hmm. All right.
Well, my parents were always, they laughed the way that they told me things about the world. Yeah, they wouldn't say anything. You know, they probably do what we West Indians do, kind of a lot of eye rolling, but they'll still sit there and listen. Okay. But it's better than introducing that to children.
I agree. Let them find out on their own.
That's right.
We're two for two, Sharon.
What's more annoying, sitting through a long, boring movie or watching a good movie and having people around you talking where you can't hear everything?
I would say the second one. Because if you're really trying to watch something and people are distracting you, that's frustrating. A long, boring movie, like, we've all seen boring movies. Sometimes you could veg out and think about something else, but people ruining something that you want to be... Want to be watching? I'm not a fan. Not a fan.
Oh.
Sharon?
Yeah, I totally agree, my darling. I totally agree.
It's like we have love connection.
All right. Let me try this one. What would be worse, a nagging headache or a bad sunburn?
Well, the sunburn is not going to happen to me.
Well, that's why this question's crap, Sharon.
Because expose myself to that kind of heat.
I get sunburned if I just look at the moon too hard.
Uh-oh. We got some differences in the couple.
But.
Yeah. Well.
I don't know. A headache does ruin everything.
I'm rubbing up the oil on you, my darling.
Oh.
I'm all for rubbing up the oil on you. well, no problem with that.
Well, in that case, I'll take headache. Well, sunburn, like, it bothers you, but I feel like you can ignore it. I feel like a headache, like, you can't ignore a headache. Like, it just, there's
it
no ignoring.
It depends on where you get the sunburn, too, I guess.
Yeah.
Don't get sunburned. I'll take the headache.
No, you're lucky. You're lucky, because I fry.
Gotcha. All right. What's more annoying, stubbing your toe or stepping on something hard barefoot?
Stepping on something hard barefoot.
I'm going to go the opposite way. I think stubbing your toe, like really jamming that big toe into something. I can't stand it.
I kind of see your point. Like as I was writing it up, I'm saying every time I stub my toe, that first initial reaction is, broke it. Damn it. And then it takes like 10 minutes to haggle down. I mean, I guess when you step on something, you're more pissed off of whomever left it.
What if we made extreme sumo where there was things to step on in the middle of the ring?
With, like, Legos in the middle of the ring.
Say that. You know, when I first started sumo wrestling, the way the belt is tied.
Right.
If you fall on the knot at the back and then somebody lands on top of you, believe me, that shoots right through your body. From the soles of your feet to the top of your head, you feel it has been lifted. Pain. So that's why when you said that, so I know if you step on, there are certain things you step on, and possibly like the sensitive part of the, you know, the center of your foot.
Yeah.
That's going to shoot right through your body.
All right.
Stubbing your toe, you might, it'll be
eye water. All right.
We're keeping that sound bite. Yeah. Few more?
Yeah.
All right. What is worse at a restaurant, a rude waiter or horrible food?
What was the first one?
A rude waiter.
Rude waiter or horrible food? I'm going to go horrible food because you can get past the rude waiter as soon as the food gets there. But horrible food, that ruins the whole night out.
See, I'm kind of the opposite. Like, I get mad with the rude waiter because, I mean, a lot of times when I go out, I just, like, guess on what I want. I always like to try new stuff. So once in a blue moon, you get dealt a bad hand. But, dealing with that person and then saying to yourself, okay, I also got to leave you a tip and all that fun stuff, that annoys me more.
Sharon, do you guys...
Sometimes it depends. A smile, a little bit, sometimes just being a little bit courteous can break them down. I've had it where people are being extremely rude and they're trying to talk, you know, they're saying things to me. And I'm not ignoring them by walking away, but I've just been me.
Right. And how can anybody be mean to you?
You've had a bad day. Oh, what can you... You try to empathize with them.
No, I said, how can anybody be mean to you?
They can try, but generally, it doesn't happen too often.
All right, one more.
All right, what's worse, listening to music you can't stand for an hour, or getting a jingle stuck in your head?
Bad music.
Oh, music I can't stand for an hour.
I agree, Sharon. Sometimes I like a jingle in my head. Like, I'll just be singing it, like, you know. I like to make jingles on the spot about anything, so I think it's practice. So, what about you, Sharon?
Crap music is not good. No. Music is the food of life. No. It can't be crap. No.
So, Sharon, so me and you, we're going out to eat, right? And we go to the jukebox, you know, if they still have those, or whatever they call them. I pump in a couple dollars, a couple quarters. I bang them in there. And I go to put on a playlist, and I say, Sharon, you pick. What's three songs you're going to pick that is going to make our meal perfect?
I'm pretty old-fashioned, so I think I would go for anything that is going to be Motown.
Okay.
Be something from Bob Marley.
All right, I'm in.
Be something from Horace Riley. I'm very much a reggae woman. I love old time. I also love the music of the 50s and the 60s.
Okay.
So there's not anything in particular, but I suppose it depends on how I'm feeling, those type of old time songs.
Well, think about it. You might be approached with this if you make that TV show. So I'm just, these are questions that you might have to think of. You know, we're just prepping you.
Yeah. That's why Scott's taking good notes.
Yep. I got a question. What is a perfect first date? What's a date? Like, what's going to cut the awkwardness out quick and make it fun and enjoyable?
Someone who is a gentleman.
All right, check.
Someone who is conversant.
Check.
Someone who's intelligent. Someone who knows the world or still wants to travel the world, because I do meet a lot of guys. And it's like, oh, well, I've been there. I don't want to do this. I don't want to do that. And you think, well, you know what? You're not for me. Because I am still looking for someone who is still alive and who wants to travel, who wants to see the world. Even if you've been there before, going with someone else to me, it's still a different experience.
Definitely. Well, I'm glad you're looking for someone that's still alive. That's always
a
good thing, Shane.
Yeah, that would be an awkward situation.
But what about, like, the actual day? What are you doing? Like, are you going out to eat? Are you going to a movie? Are you going for coffee? Where would you want to go?
It's most likely to be a date either in a hotel or in a restaurant.
Okay. I like it. I like, what kind of food are you going out for? What's the perfect
food? What sort of food? What type of food? I like something with a little bit of bite, a little bit of spice.
Okay,
all right. But I also like steak. I love good steak. When it comes to food, I'm not really too fussy.
Right.
As long as it's, I'm looking at presentation, I'm looking at taste, good company, good wine, maybe even good brandy thrown in at the end of the night.
All right. Calm down. You're getting me. I'm getting sweaty.
Scott, you all right? Yeah. You need a towel?
Yeah. I think the perfect first date, the perfect way to meet somebody, I think the first time is to go out for coffee. You know why? Because one, it's cheap and it's quick, right? So the man or whoever doesn't have a lot of expectations. They buy coffee, you sit down face to face, and you talk, and then you can go anywhere from there. But that initial just meetup, you know, is like there's nowhere to hide. There's no, you're not buying an expensive dinner and hiding behind that, and she's not faking interest. So she can get dinner and just a cup of coffee. I think that's a perfect first date. And then then after that, hey, you want to grab a drink? Hey, you want to grab something to eat? And then it escalates from there. What do you think, Sharon?
That is true. That does make it a lot easier, and it doesn't tie you to think. Because I've watched a program here, and sometimes the women go and they think the men should pay.
Right. I have no problem paying.
I don't always think that. I don't think that you should just go out and expect.
Oh.
Sharon? We lost you, Sharon.
No!
Come on back, Sharon.
Is this one of the jingles you write?
Sharon, we miss your sumo hugs.
You're sharing my heart.
All right, I'll hang up and call her back here. Yep. Sharon, I love you, Sharon.
Uh-oh. That's not the good sound.
That's not the sound we like.
Boop. There we go.
There we go now. Oh, Sharon.
Come
Pick
back
up the phone
me.
Now.
Oh, man, now I know what it feels like to be dumped.
Yeah, you dumped us. You hung up on us, I think.
No, it just it just cut out.
I see. Right when you're about to talk about how you don't believe that women should not pay, all of a sudden you magically cut out. I get it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, sometimes women do think men should always pay, so then they possibly go out and order the most expensive items.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I wouldn't do anything like that. Anywhere that I'm going, I can take care of myself. If you meet a guy and, you know, he's insisting to pay, at least the option is there.
Right.
But I wouldn't go out with no money, just hoping.
See, that's why I think the coffee thing is brilliant, too, because if coffee date's going bad, it could be over in 20 minutes. If coffee date's going good, that could just be the start. You could sit there for an hour and a half talking and then go out. Like, you could really, the coffee date is very flexible. That's why I think
dragged out a long time.
No, and it doesn't involve alcohol right away. Like, you really, you know, I mean, not to say that I wouldn't do a couple shots beforehand,
yeah,
but, you know, just to get the fear away. But,
I know.
But, so Sharon, what's on the horizon for you? What are you working on? Anything, you know, anything you plan on doing that we should be looking out for?
I've just finished a music video with a group called Hikari.
Wait. Who? What are they called?
Hikari. If you look on YouTube and you look at Stella, STELLAR.
Okay.
Hikari, HICARI.
Right.
I did a music video with that group, and that was released last month, at the end of last month.
What are you doing in it? Like, dancing? Oh, sumo? Singing? What are you doing? Hold on, we're pulling it up right now.
It's like a fantasy scene.
Oh my God.
Meeting two young guys who thought they could make fun of me.
All right.
And in the fantasy scene, I then turn up as myself, Sharon Alexander.
Oh my Sumo. God, you're about to fight them. This is awesome. We have pulled it up right now. This is great. We're definitely going to have to watch it. We'll share it on our
absolutely
Twitter and whatnot. That's pretty great.
There you are.
All right, how'd you get involved in that?
That was someone else, and the group actually found me to ask me would I do it for them. And they're a young group, up and coming, really great fun, great guys. And I didn't hesitate, and I had a wonderful day filming it with them in, I think it must be something like the London Dungeons, but
I love it.
It was great, great fun. And then I've done some. At the moment, I'm doing a lot of supporting artist work, like crowd scene, little bits here and there, some TV stuff, some filming things. So it's a great opportunity because, people have still got my name and still calling me and say, look, are you interested? It might be a budget movie, but hey,
it's awesome.
I still go along. Yeah, so it's very interesting.
Sharon,
look at that fierceness in her eyes.
I know we're looking.
She's working the hair. I'll give you that's some nice looking hair there in the video.
Oh, I think Mike's coming onto my side now. Get away! Stay away!
Come on, Scott.
No.
Come on, we're a team.
No.
We can reenact this scene.
Don't ruin this for me.
We'll interview Hikari. We'll reenact the video with Sharon.
Don't ruin this for me. Sharon, once again.
Come to New York in October.
Oh yeah. We'll have to maybe we'll have to meet up somewhere.
I haven't been to New York, and I am. It's my best friend's 40th birthday, so we're looking to think. Yeah, we're going to do that this year, but I've been told it's really cold.
It can be. It shouldn't be freezing by then, though.
It'd still be the fall season down here, so it won't be terrible in any way.
I mean, you'll get cold days here and there, but sometimes, believe it or not, we've been getting like hot Octobers, like in the last couple of years. So you might luck out.
You never know. So that's kind of what I'm looking forward to. I've got a couple of weddings to go to. I do actually have a really full schedule, as well as waiting for my other grandchild that's coming along in October as well.
All right. Well, that is fantastic. Good. Well, it's always good talking to you, and I'm sure in the next coming year or so, we'll contact you again to talk, and maybe we'll have you check in every now and then. We love having you on. So,
always a pleasure.
Oh, thank you. And I love chatting to you guys. I probably won't go to sleep now, but...
Well, I have that effect on ladies. Yeah. So. No, actually, I usually put them to sleep. But,
yeah, that's true. Usually this podcast does the trick. Yeah.
Sharon, thanks so much, and good luck with everything you got going on.
Thank you so much, guys. Take care. God bless. And oyasumi nasai.
All right.
Probably the most bubbly person we had on the show to date.
Don't call her bubbly.
Why?
Oh.
Personality.
Yes. She is she's the best.
Yeah. Remember, she comes in October. That's my birthday, so I get a gift.
You're going to get a gift from Sharon.
Yeah.
Okay. I don't think so. She only has eyes for me.
Yeah.
But,
I'm sure after the episode, she looked us up, and she knows the truth.
She knows. Yeah. So our infamous governor is back in the news again.
FUPA news.
I hate this man. Admit. Me and my buddy were thinking about making bumper stickers that say, like, some people hate Trump, some people hate Obama, but we all hate Chris Christie.
That could sell.
Yeah,
that
I know.
That could sell.
Which we actually might make some. But it's just, he's just such a buffoon. Like, he's just such an arrogant buffoon. Like, okay, those of you who don't know, who maybe you're not down with Jersey news, the government shutdown went down, something to do with Horizon Healthcare. They're having some kind of debate.
Yeah, it's a budget crisis difference. They couldn't agree on a budget. It has mainly to do with Blue Cross, the amount of money they have for being a nonprofit. He basically wants to have control so more money can flow in through them. It was agreed upon. they shut down the state right before the 4th of July weekend, which means all state parks are closed.
And big thing in Jersey would be beaches.
Yeah.
State beaches, a couple state parks are beaches also. So he shuts it down. It's kind of big news over the weekend. A lot of people, that's how they spend their time in Jersey, is going down the shore.
Mm-hmm. A lot of horror stories about people, like, camping, that cop would come by and say, you got 1 hour to pack up, and it's like, well, it's going to take 4 hours. It's like, it's nice. You got 1 hour because we're locking up the park.
Yeah. So what does our trusty governor do? Well, he goes and spends the day on the beach with his family. And some good citizen in a plane was able to take pictures of him lounging with his disgusting fupa hanging out. And I don't care if that's where the governor is allowed to go. It's their property. What kind of look does that say to...
when an entire beach is shut down on a holiday weekend, which probably would bring the state millions upon millions of dollars, but he is on the beach at the governor's mansion off of the beach.
Yep.
By himself, well, with his family members.
Yeah, I heard, I wonder if I could find it real quick, but he just did an interview, they called him, they're like, Governor, like, why, you know how this looks? He's like, that's the problem with politics today. Everyone's worried about how it looks. He's like, I said I was going to be here. So people are so shocked that I stood up to my word and I was going to be there anyway. Like, we're like, no, you're completely missing the point. Yeah. Like, it's the same thing with you shutting down the bridges. Like, you know. You just don't get how that looks.
Everybody under me knew about it, but I had no idea, even though I was laughing inside.
Yeah, he's just an absolute buffoon and an awful man. I wonder if there's like a Christie countdown, like what day he's at.
And I guess the biggest story out of Jersey from it is, I forget who they interviewed, but somebody in the government, they talked to him about why was Christie on the beach. He wasn't on the beach, he wasn't getting any sun. Then they basically produced the picture that Scott was talking about.
Yeah.
To the reply was, oh, he was on the beach for a little bit, then he went back to work. He didn't get any sun. He had a hat on.
Let's see.
That was the literal response to calm everybody down.
Yeah, a beach that he shut down to the public. Yeah. I want to find his reason. I know I heard it before. And you just got to hear how pompous this guy sounds. Like, he's like almost like... yelling at the people. Of course, he's like mini Trump. Not mini anything. Where's that playing from? There's so many pop-ups on these news websites that you can't even like. I want to find what he says. He slammed for sunbathing. His approval rating is at 15% now. 15%.
We need to interview somebody in that 15. I gotta find that person.
If I were governor, I can't find his explanation, but whatever. I'll get in a minute. But, our governor is absolutely just the worst, man. Listen, like, when you have no sides liking you, you're just a jerk off. Like, I don't know. But thank you, Chris Christie, for being you.
As always.
The only good thing to come out of his time is the picture of him in the softball uniform. That's about the only contribution this man has made to society. He's given us fodder for laughter, but I don't know.
He was playing third, Mike pile of shit.
But I guess we should get out of here.
All right.
I want to thank Marcelo, and I want to thank Sharon Alexander for another fantastic. Good to bring some of the guests back on, and we're going to do that over the next month, getting some guests that we've had on back on. So it's good to hear them, especially once you get that first interview done. Then it's just, just talking.
Yeah. It's really nice to keep in touch with them and see they're still excited to talk to us.
Yeah. Yeah, they're probably
that's a bigger shocker.
They're probably like, God, how do
they
I say no?
They remembered me? Oh, God dang.
Oh, here it is. Here it is. Hold on. All right. Before we get there. I'm sorry if this is the audio clip or not, but he's defending himself amid criticism for spending time over 4th of July weekend on the beach amid a state government shutdown. I'm sorry they're not the governor, Christie said of the people who had access to the beach. This is a residence. Here's the problem. Here's another stupid freaking pop-up. This is a residence. Here's the problem. We have a residence in Princeton as well, and that place is a place where people can go and tour, but they can't if the government's closed. Am I supposed to move out and stay in a hotel? Governor Christie, welcome to Good Day. I'm sure. Let's see. They had a helicopter over yesterday. Did you see the chopper? It wasn't a helicopter. It was an airplane. Reporter, it was an airplane. Yeah, and yeah. This is an incredible scandal, as you know, because they actually caught a politician being where he said he was going to be. With the people he said he was going to be with. Starting a week ago today, I told people we had plans to be here, and whether the government shut down or didn't, we're going to be here because it's our residence. So they actually quote a politician keeping his word, actually saying being where he's going to be. Oh my God, what a scandal. He actually was with his wife and children, and they caught him. But Governor, you can understand, though, why a lot of people are upset. They can't go to the beach. They want to be able to do that when you're doing it, and they can't. Well, I'm sorry. They're not the governor. This is a residence. Here's the problem. Blah, 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 the Princeton thing. No, but Governor, you know what the optics of this is. You could have stayed. This is the problem with politics today. This is the problem. When I tell you the substance of the problem, then you say, well, you know the optics. The fact is, the reason the park is closed is one simple reason. I didn't close it. The legislature did not pass a budget for me to sign so we would have money to keep it open. That's the simple fact of the matter. I told legislature all week last week. I told them yesterday, pass me the budget. I'll sign any budget you give me. So.
I like how he tried to compare Princeton to the beach on 4th of July weekend.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and telling people they're not the governor, so yeah. You can't go to the beach.
Yeah.
That's a good look.
There's no airplanes in Princeton right now.
But he's just an awful person. I don't usually like get that involved in politics and stuff like that, but he's just one of those people that I hate so much that like I won't bat an eye when he dies of a heart attack.
Mm.
Like he's just a very bad person.
He's just sticking around with the fingers crossed. Please pick me, Trump. Please pick me for something. I think there's like six things still remaining.
I almost hope he's like on the board of health. Just like if we're going down, let's just go down swinging. Like I don't know. He's just,
we all eat KFC wherever we go. What kind of policy is that?
Just an atrocious man. But let's get out of here. So again, guys, why don't you go? You got anything to promote here?
I will promote since it's his birthday today. The day we're recording this, Paul Doodridge, his band, The Wannabes. They do a lot of covers of 70s and 80s songs. They tour all over the bars in the Wilkes-Barre, Pennsylvania area. If you're interested in some of the dates coming up, you can Google them. It's The Wannabes. That's WANABEES. And they have a Facebook page. They have groups. And they're a good bunch of people. We miss you, Father Paul. And go
Father
and join
Father Paul,
them.
Everybody!
Michael, you crazy son of a bitch!
Yeah, so Father Paul's a good guy. Check out his band. Just as far as our guest, if you're near a bar, go watch Jim Miller take on Anthony Pettis this week.
Absolutely.
I'll be at the Comedy Cove Friday and Saturday, so I'm hoping I get out in time to watch it. Maybe they'll have it on at the bar. I don't know. But either way, I'm going to watch it. Hopefully Jim Miller takes him down. Cool little bit of news. Jim Miller has never fought under a nickname before. You know how every fighter has a
Please
nickname?
Please say Jim the Verbal Shenanigan.
I'll read this to you. It's pretty cool. He's never fought on a nickname this week. He's going to. For the first time in my career at UFC 213, I'll be fighting with a nickname. I joked about the Warthog in the past, and this is what always meant. I had a picture of an A-10 on my wall as a kid. Short, hairy, smelly, and ugly, but built to absorb punishment and keep moving forward. So he's going to be Jim the Warthog Miller.
Nice.
So as I'll be signing off also. I'll be at the Comedy Cove in Springfield Friday and Saturday if anybody is interested. Guys, keep subscribing. Listen, I saw a couple new reviews on iTunes, which I think was pretty cool. Keep sharing the podcast. And, you know, we got some good guests coming up this month. We won't get into that, but we got a month scheduled again, so it's pretty cool.
We tell you, but it wouldn't happen the second we even announce it.
Well, that's a big problem here. But that's it. I don't have a song cued, so Berlo, keep talk for a minute.
So I like soccer, and we just talked to a soccer guy, so I promote soccer.
You like sumo?
So if you like doing sports that either you don't touch the ball or you use it to throw a heavy person out of a circle, I say soccer or sumo would be the best one.
Are there any other sports that you could throw heavy people out of a circle?
I mean, I guess football. Maybe there's an emblem in the middle of the field you can.
Well, you told me before all about that sport that involves throwing heavy people out of a circle that wasn't sumo. Why don't you just, before we go, tell everybody about it?
Sporkington Society Fun Activity Group. That's what it was called.
Sporkington?
Yeah. It comes from a different part of the UK. I'm surprised Sharon didn't know about it.
No.
Like the northwest side of the UK.
Sporkington.
Yeah.
And what is the actual sport they do?
Well, it's different things. It involves eight players chasing one player that is the equivalent weight of the eight players. So right. You need like very light people on the eight team side, you know.
So there's eight light people chasing one heavy guy.
Yeah.
Okay. And Sporkington.
Exactly.
Right.
Northwest UK. Come on now.
Okay. The object is what?
Well, you have to hover around them and then try to, get them up on your shoulders.
You have to get them on your shoulders? Okay.
Yeah. Well, that's why there's eight people versus the one heavy guy. You know, you got a chance there.
Yeah.
And from there, you do like a little trot to the side. And then once you throw the person out of the circle, you scream, squats! You know, that's their victory cry. And that's how you play.
Goodbye, everybody. Life is funny. Laugh at it. Keep doing that. You're back in Sporkington. See ya.